Going to the Wars by Max Hastings, read by Charles Armstrong, including an introduction read by the author.
Introduction. This is a book about a bygone age of war reporting, before the existence of mobile and sat phones, before journalists became regarded as legitimate targets by many non-state combatants, before the world descended from the curiously stable nuclear post-Second World War order into something closer to 21st century anarchy. When my colleagues and I travelled to report conflict, whether for BBC TV or a British newspaper, we were offered no training such as is now deemed mandatory by insurance companies, nor, except in Vietnam, issued with a protective flak jacket and helmet. In part, this may be because many reporters of that era had done national military service. Some had even fought for their countries and thus knew a fair amount about armies and lethal weapons, as their successors do not until they learn the hard way. It's a wry reflection that more than 60 years have passed since I completed, albeit narrowly so, the British Army's parachute course, as I describe later. It should not be thought, however, that this story is suffused with nostalgia. All wars, whether of the past or the present, are ghastly human tragedies. Conflict zones should never have been, should never come to be, treated as theatres of cruelty for the advancement of ambitious journalists' careers. Nonetheless, I've always thought that most of us in the media are guilty to some degree of adventurism. A few years ago, in a BBC TV studio discussion about war corresponding chaired by that great broadcast reporter John Simpson, I suggested to my fellow panellists John Snow of Channel 4 News and Christiane Amanpour of CNN that when we report from battlefields, few of us contrive to leave our egos at home. Both rejected my suggestion, a slur on their integrity as they seemed to perceive it. They asserted decisively and even perhaps rather crossly that they went to wars to raise the banner of truth, to tell the story to the audience at home. Yes, yes, I said, of course we all aspired to do that, but weren't even the most celebrated of our kind just a little vain as well? John Simpson kindly supported my view, but Snow and Amanpour weren't having any of it. And, of course, I recognised that both were and remain admirably principled promoters of truth. The foremost advantage that my generation of journalists possessed over those of today was that in the 20th century, our employers in all countries could mobilize large resources to fund our travels. Advertising revenues were streaming into the coffers of mainstream media, as in 2024 they are not, to support an astonishing range of global reporting. The London Evening Standard, for which I reported on and off for some years, found cash to send staff to every big overseas story. Its editor dispatched me to Biafra in January 1969, to the Arab-Israeli War of Attrition in 1970, and to the Yom Kippur War of 1973, as well as funding repeated visits to Vietnam. When I edited the Daily Telegraph, I felt able to deploy 17 staff on coverage of the 1991 First Gulf War, six of them in the theatre of operations in the Middle East. We took for granted our budget as well as our duty to cover the war in depth, as did every other major news organisation of that era. Today, that sort of money is simply not available. Even such lavishly funded newspapers as the Washington Post, owned by Jeff Bezos, feel obliged to cut back global operations to reduce losses. Thus we were, though we didn't then know it, a privileged generation of foreign correspondents and explicitly war reporters. I was among the youngest and deferred to the many of my colleagues who'd witnessed and in some cases fought in the Second World War.